Next, we have Mr. Quang Tring from Cisco. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Good afternoon. My name is Quang Tring, and I work for Cisco as part of GCT, the Global Certification Team. And my presentation is on improving CPP development with user participation. So here's a quick overview. We'll start by taking a look back at history to know what's our starting point so that we'll appreciate how far we have gone. We'll look at some statistic, and then we'll look at some of the benefit for user and organization. And then we'll look at some example of improvement relating to cryptography, and finally the conclusion. Sorry. So does everybody remember the old basic robustness PP and medium robustness PP, especially if you guys are in the US? So I think those have been sunset a while back. But just some history lessons. Most of those were created in a vacuum, meaning that there wasn't really any input or feedback from industry. There wasn't really a public invitation to collaborate or participate. So it kind of sent that message of, this is my way or the highway. It was a little bit hard to maintain, and it wasn't kept updated with the rapidly changing technology. So when there was a difficulty in understanding a requirement or determine the original intent of the author, it wasn't that easy to get to that, you know, get that author, get the PP updated. And there were sometimes conflicting requirements between the PP. So for example, you have router, firewall, VPN. So if you want to claim all three of those PP, you might have a situation where the requirements, either you have the same requirement in all three PP that are slightly different. And in that case, you would just pick the one that are more stricter, meaning that you would pick the requirement that will meet all the PP. But in the more difficult scenario is when you have requirement where you meet this, you won't be able to meet the other PP. And just a disclaimer, this is just based on my personal experience working at the lab way back then, so I'm not representing Cisco. And another thing here is that this slide isn't really intended to bash the old PP or bash any scheme. It's really intended to show the progress, the improvement that we made since then and to now. And for example, on my last bullet, those conflicting requirements was maybe from the result of basically back then you might have a product that might be a firewall, you might have another product that's a VPN, and you might have another product that's a router. Of course, nowadays you have product that basically you could have switch functionality plus router functionality plus firewall plus VPN. So it doesn't make sense to make a vendor go through three or four separate evaluations. They should be able to go through one evaluation and just claim all three or four of that functionality. And of course, we know that now with modular PP that this issue doesn't really exist anymore, because now we have basically, we have a base protection profile where it specifies the requirements for most network devices, and then you can add extended packet or EP if you want to claim specific functionalities such as IPS or VPN gateway. Okay. So before, this is just showing the progression in the PP development. So before you kind of have a close, and then we progress to basically a limited, maybe there's no feedback or inputs, but maybe only from a consultant or a contractor. And now we move to basically a technical community, which is basically getting input from labs, vendor, academia, anybody you're open to join. And then from there, we went to ITC, which is now an international technical community. So now it's not only just US-centric anymore. And also, we went from basically those basic and medium robustness PP onto basically the next one will be NDPP and the traffic filtering EP. And then we went from there to NDCPP and the WFCP. So who creates the CPP? So the ITC, the International Technical Community, so they are formed to create and maintain CPP and the SD, which is the supporting document. The supporting document is actually very important as well, because while the CPP describes the requirement, the SD describes how to evaluate those requirements. What information must the vendor provide in the TSS? What information must the vendor provide in the AGD or the user guide? And most importantly, what testing is required to be performed by the lab to verify that that product or the tool meets those requirements? And this is just a quote from the CC portal. Membership of the ITC brings together many skills and background needed for creation of an effective CPP and is supporting documentation. Okay. So this is just some statistic. I basically picked the NDITC just because it's by far the largest and most active ITC. That doesn't mean that we don't care about other ITC or TC. But basically, the ITC creates the NDCPP and the firewall CPP along with the supporting documents. It has about 82 participants as of, I think, 2016. As you can see, in terms of the membership breakdown, it's pretty diverse. You have about 40% government, 29% lab, 28% vendor, and basically 3% everybody else. So I know what some of you guys are thinking. You guys are very, you know, most people are busy. They have their main job that pays the bill. You know, this is basically asking them to go to more meetings, do more work, don't get additional pay, unfortunately. And, you know, how do people find the extra time? You know, why should people join and participate? So what are the benefits? So what are the benefits of joining and basically, more importantly, actively participating? So what do an individual get from an ITC? So as an individual contributor, you get to share your ideas and your knowledge with other colleagues from labs, company, and organization. The idea and technology can be about a specific technology that we all share. It could be something that's evolving or something that may be on the horizon. The discussion can be focused on a specific requirement, either a new one or an old requirement that needs updating or in some case needs to be retired. So what do organization gets from their involvement? So from an organization perspective at Cisco, we get to be part of a conversation that involves government agency, policymaker, and risk owner. We gain a better understanding of the requirement and how they will be evaluated. This gives us time for development work, as well as basically planning for future changes such as upgrading to a newer RFC, upgrading to a new protocol version, or basically just how, you know, replacing sunset cryptographic algorithms. It allows us basically a seat at a table to review proposed changes and also in some case maybe challenge them. I used to work at a lab, so I mean from from a lab perspective, it gives them an insight into the requirement. They can basically, and also insight to the proposed testing requirements so that they can update their infrastructure, you know, gets the required to needed to handle the new testing requirement. They can give a heads up to their customer of any requirements that are coming down the pipe that may give those customers some issue. They can also challenge requirements that they think are unrealistic, duplicate, or basically requires too much effort and doesn't really provide that much security value or doesn't improve the security of the product. And most importantly, they can also propose alternative solutions so that they can still meet the intent of the government, but not, you know, just provide a better solution. So the rest of the slide will be basically just providing an example of where those improvement has been resulting from user participation. There are numerous improvement, but this presentation will only focus on basically the ones that are related to cryptography because this is a crypto conference. Some of those improvement were from NDPP to NDCPP version 1.0. And some were basically from version 1.0 to version 2.0, which has been recently public now. Again, we're going to stay focused on just NDCPP, but of course there are other CPP. These are the crypto related requirements from the NDCPP. I'm not going to go through them in detail, but you have key generation, establishment, destruction, the cryptographic operation. You have random bit generator and entropy source, and then you have the four approved cryptographic protocol. So some improvement here is basically because the ITC is the international technical community, so where possible, the group tried to replace FIPS and NIST reference with ISO. And also in version 2.0, they added AES counter mode, so before there was only CBC and GCM. But more importantly, I think not making algorithm mandatory was a step in the right direction. And the reason for that is that basically, if you guys recall the old NDPP version 1, there was certain protocol that was mandated. So for example, for TOS, there was a CypherSweep that was mandated. Now, unfortunately, that CypherSweep was actually one of the weakest of the list. And that might be from, and it was mandated because there might be an old RFC that requires that. But in this case here, we shouldn't really, the CPP shouldn't mandate any CypherSweep or any algorithm. We should let our customer force us, no, we should let our customer tell the vendor which one they want to support, and if the customer wants us, the vendor, to support the weaker one based on some old RFC, then the vendor will do that, but the CPP should not be mandating any certificate algorithms. Another improvement would be the addition of CKM.2. So if you guys, the old NDPP only had key generation, but it didn't have key establishment. Of course, we know that certain protocol like TOS and Association, they have DHE or ECDH. So those are key establishment algorithm. There was some improvement on the zeroization requirement. One thing was basically the removal of the re-verify, so that really wasn't a FIPS requirement. Even if you put code there, it might be optimized away by the compiler. So that was removed. Another improvement I thought was basically making the bits that are used to overwrite more flexible. So in the old version, based on where the crypto keys are stored, you would have to zeroize it or overwrite it with certain things. So if it's stored in this location, you would zeroize it with, you know, this set, or if it's stored here, then you would have to zeroize it with a random string that are generated from the approved DRBG. So I think the changes just makes it more flexible and let the implementation detail, leave that up to the vendor and don't dictate that. Another thing with the DLBG was basically the removal of ANSI X93, which is a really old RNG, and there was a removal of a more controversial algorithm as well. Won't mention why. So those are basically the current improvements. So there's still work that needs to be done. So these are basically either future improvement or future challenges that the group still needs to face. And you know, more user participation, we should be able to handle that. Some of this list is basically FFC domain parameter and RFC pre-computed. So basically the problem here was in CKM.2, there was a requirement actually that was put in the application note, not in the requirement itself, saying that you have to use the FFC domain parameter generated from CKM.1. So the only problem was that basically, the first problem is that you have a requirement in the application note, which is not a good thing. The other thing is that this other requirement that states that you have to follow another RFC, and the other RFC states you have to use pre-computed value. So that's being worked on right now. There's some CKM.4 deals with the zeroization. So there's been work that's been looked at. You know, right now is a lot of documentation. So you know, do we add more testing, or do we clarify when do you destroy it? Because right now it's not clear when do you need to destroy the actual keys. In terms of testing, basically how detailed the testing is, you know, how much work involved, and we have to make testing so that it meets a variety of product, not just one category of product. Right now we only have NIST ECC curve, so that's also, do we include other non-NIST curve, or what would that be? And also additional algorithm for example, key generation. I think for now, currently right now, CKM.1 only identify the one that are FIPS or NIST related. Another one is the TOS test clarification. So there's been a lot of TRT with those. So how do we improve those tests? How do we clarify those? You know, you might have a test that states, you know, we're looking for this behavior, but then if you look at the RFC, this behavior is not allowed. So basically, how do we update those tests? There's also basically potential of addition of TOS 1.3. So when we add 1.3, what does that entail? Do we need to modify the requirement? Do we need to add any new requirement? And last but not least, basically the NTP. Right now, NTP traffic is, you don't need to encrypt that, but basically this actually is a subgroup that's looking into should we make the NTP traffic require over a approved protocol like IPsec or TOS, or do we make it so that you can use NTP, but you have to have either symmetric key or auto key? So those are the work that's been going on. So in conclusion, we believe that more user providing feedback and into the CPP development process, we will improve and influence basically the security requirement and the assurance activity. So if you guys have not joined, please join. And if you join but haven't participated, please participate and really contribute. And basically any improvement we make to the CPP will benefit the whole CC community. Thank you very much. Question?
So do you have any advice on how to guard against the right names by PP that are common, or CPP that is the least common denominator? So when you have 15 companies in a room, you're going to do the least bit of certification ability because we want to satisfy everybody. So how do you come against that when you're collaborative?
I can't really hear you. Can you?
Let me try again. So when you have 15 companies in a room that are talking about a CPP, how do you come against the potential of having the least common denominator being tested, as in the least security mechanism available, instead of having it up at the, what you desire?
So your question is, if you have 15 companies participating in the ITC, how do you ensure that basically the strongest one, the stronger measure gets approved as the requirement and not the weakest?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, that's a really great question. And basically, right now, basically, part of the network ITC, there's subgroup, there's a lot of participation on only office. There's basically, so for example, basically for some of the challenging problem like NTP, ITC, or the tests, basically there will be subgroup that you can join or you can even volunteer to lead. And basically it's an ongoing discussion. So basically it's not really one vendor that really dictates the requirements. So it's kind of like basically we collaborate, you know, we come to a consensus, and basically ultimately everybody, you know, there's no solution that you can come to that will make everybody happy. So you just have to sometime just either vote or come to a consensus that, hey, this is the majority. And you know, the CPP also has to go through a public review as well. So you won't have a situation where basically one vendor gets to dictate all the requirements. So, yeah. Hey, Tony.
Can I just make a comment on that? part of the rest of the mechanism is you don't just have 15 developers in the room. You have people who are there from the stakeholder communities, from the user communities, from the labs, and so part of the responsibility is for the whole group to see that we don't sink to the lowest level. I think that's yeah. Part of the mechanism. Right. Once we've written the threats down, we commit ourselves to meeting those threats as well. So I think that's quite important. Yeah. Come back after the break. Yeah.
Thank you.